Hi, Umbar.
Hi, Trisha.
Are you a bank loan?
No, why?
Because you got my interest.
Babe, I always keep you interested.
And why is that?
Because we're the women of the Lord.
Welcome to
Women of the Lord.
This is Trisha.
This is Umbar.
And today we're talking about first impressions.
First impressions include presentation, expectations, and context.
And honestly, after the conversation you're about to hear, we basically realized that first impressions,
they're just a bunch of dating apps. So has Hinge been a good download so far?
I literally hate it.
Are you going to delete it?
I'm going to leave it for a little bit, but like, it's just so uninteresting. I can't handle it. I'm just like, I wish people were more interesting, I guess. It's not even the app. I'm just like, I kind of just wish everything was just a little more fun. This is like kind of
like dating apps in general.
Yeah.
Maybe there is a dating app that you should just design yourself then, you know?
Like only for interesting people. Boring people would somehow end up on it.
You have to apply to use the app.
Yeah,
I've been saying that for a year now. You should apply to be on a dating app because Tinder should definitely check out the weirdos that they get, you know?
Hinge should also, let's be honest.
I feel like the better part about, what I don't like about Hinge is that anyone can just message you, and of course you can accept it, but it's like, why do I want to see that? At least with Tinder, you can choose who you want to match with.
No, exactly. Yeah, so first episode.
So Trisha and I have loads of interesting conversations, but now I guess you get to be the proverbial fly on the wall on this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard that we have a very interesting dynamic, quote unquote. So
thanks for accused podcast. Of being lesbian lovers on multiple occasions.
You did make a wedding site for us, so it's not far off.
I mean, I feel like that's really funny because if our episode's about first impressions now, I mean, once we confess exactly what we thought of each other that first day, it's going to be really funny when we link the website at the end.
It is going to be really funny. But also, it goes to show that first impressions are more often than not wrong. Although, yeah. To be fair, I don't know if it's true for you, but it's true for me. I was super nervous. Like, I get nervous meeting people for the first time.
So I guess before we can delve into the emotions, maybe we should set the scene on how the environment was like. Why were we meeting? Who introduced us?
No. Let's never do that.
We're going to leave you listeners in the dark completely.
You have no idea how we met.
It was a brothel.
Yeah, I walked in looking for some sweet ass.
So I was a college freshman. Trisha was a college sophomore, and we were both in the English major. And both of us, without knowing, had applied to be in the Muse research program, which is like a summer experience offered by our school.
So we had different professors, and while I had taken the professor that Ambar was working with, like I had taken a class with her, I was not planning on doing work with her because I knew she was kind of a hard ass, which is something Ambar later figured out very rudely. But I was doing work with a different professor, and the professor we mutually had wanted to set us up, essentially. And so she basically said, I have a student who's doing Muse with me, since you don't know anybody that's doing Muse, and it's mostly a STEM thing, it was mostly science majors. So it was nice to have like a humanities person. And so that's kind of how we got set up in the first place. There was like a time, a place, a meeting set up.
It was a meet cute, honestly.
Yeah, it was a meet cute, except what happened, Ambar? So weird. It was almost like we were supposed to meet.
To preface this conversation, I was enduring the most stressful finals week of all time. I was taking 3 writing courses because who does that? Who does that to themselves? They literally advise you not to do that. But I did it. And so the day I met Trisha, I had just finished writing a 7-page paper, and I was supposed to work on a creative writing portfolio, which was also due later that day. But out of the kindness of my heart, I decided to meet at this time.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Considering you bailed on the first meeting, audience, I just
I was sick.
I want to preface that there was a meeting set up before the actual first meeting, in which I was supposed to meet Ambar in this professor's office, and I went, and lo and behold, Ambar was not there. She apparently got sick and had to leave, which we can't fault her for that, but we should. I'm throwing that out there that I want to.
So now that you know the circumstances, you can understand that, at least from my headspace, I was definitely not the best version of myself or the most normal, because I was not only recovering from sickness, I had just had surgery also, which isn't relevant, but my body was in pain. And then I was stressed out. And so, I don't know, goes to show you that you really don't know what it's like to walk in someone's shoes ever.
So that's a little bit of background.
Yeah.
First impressions. Honestly, the first thing I think of when I'm thinking about first impressions is expectations. Like for me, it's not really about how I think I really come off. It's more what I'm worried about what the other person is thinking, which might just be my social anxiety speaking just in general, where I'm like, what are you thinking? Because I need to know everybody's thoughts.
Yeah.
But it's like, I immediately start to wonder what they've been told of me, especially in our case. Like, you had heard about me from a third party.
Yes.
And I'm like, she's expecting someone that she's heard about. She knows that it's a female. She doesn't really know anything else about me other than I've taken the class with this professor.
I didn't know what you looked like either, so I didn't know who to prepare for.
So it's like, how do you match an expectation that you also don't even know about? Like, you don't know where someone's standard is set either. You just know that they have one. And that's really scary, I personally think. Because I think a lot of people worry about themselves, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like a lot of people are just like, what do I come off as? But I'm like, I don't care what I come off as. I'm worried about what you already think of me. Like, you're already thinking something. There's a weird prejudgment to first impressions, I feel like.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I don't know if I've ever wondered if they've already had like this impression of me before, because I'm constantly, the only time I'm living in the present is when I'm facing a really awkward conversation, you know? When I took my comm class, the only comm class I've taken, I learned that there's this theory that there are three phases in a relationship. And so we were in the entry phase, which is when you're deciding, I don't know if I'm really vibing with this person. Do I want to continue this conversation? It's literally the phase of the first conversation, you know? And so what you're describing is like, what are you thinking of? It's that anxiety of that moment.
Yeah, that is true. I also have a tendency to not live in the present though. And I don't know if a lot of people do. Like, I think a lot of people tend to also think ahead or think backwards. But I don't know how many people are really just subsumed in this like space. Like you said, I'm only living in the present when I'm having to deal with some awkward confrontation.
Yeah.
But if I'm dealing with the awkward confrontation, my mind is immediately like, what is the future of this awkward conversation? Like, am I going to see this person again? Probably not. Am I going to talk about it to my friends? Yeah. It's like a, I can't wait to tell someone about it more than it is like, I'm experiencing this awkward moment right now.
So at least you're thinking of like commodifying your awkward experiences.
Right. I mean, we live in a consumer society. Sometimes you have to capitalize on the transaction of first impressions. Sorry, kids.
This really was a transaction because we were promised friendship from this professor. And I mean, we found it on our own, but essentially it was like, I think we came to the assumption that it was a zero sum deal, you know?
Yeah. It was definitely based on the auspices that we were going to be best friends for the whole summer. But there was no groundwork. Like, nobody laid any groundwork. They just said, here you go. And that, too, in and of itself is, like, an expectation. Like, the first impression I was supposed to have of you is that we're going to get along. Like, you had to have been the type of person that I was going to get along with. Which you happened to be, but at the time, it didn't feel like it.
Right.
Which, like, totally altered everything.
And, again, it goes back to you never know the before of someone else's experience. You're only given this like slice, right. This like slice of the pie that, yeah, I don't know where I was going with that.
you're given the slice of the pie. Me too.
I mean, I guess that's exactly how it felt, because sitting there, I know that it was probably really the wrong spot to meet. We were in the lib calf. It was crowded. Circumstances weren't good because it was meal equiv, so we had a whole bunch of TCNJ students stressed and hungry behind us. That's already a stressful environment to try to connect in, you know?
Yeah, it's also such an important part of first impressions is like where you meet, like location or circumstance.
Yeah,
is such an interesting thing because in first impressions, you're right, it's like a slice of the pie. It's just a snippet of somebody in a certain moment.
Yeah.
But it's like, there are so many things happening like around that moment in which you have to like kind of avoid, like you're just unaware of because you're like focused on the person.
Yeah.
which is strange. Because if you take into context where you are or what they're going through, then you'll be like, oh yeah, you know, that's maybe not who this person is.
And I guess, I don't know, at least in like revisiting my headspace back then, I was more concentrated on my own stress and the environment around me than the fact that I was supposed to connect with someone.
Right. See, and that's the funny thing is I was the opposite. I was focused so much on the fact that you were just weird, like you were acting strange, that I couldn't even think about like, oh, finals are happening. Like in my head, I had just ignored context. I said, in this moment, I'm supposed to be meeting someone who's clearly very stressed, but I was like, stressed about what? She's just weird, you know?
She has nothing to stress about. She's fine.
And I'm clearly really humble and not judgy. So I just want everyone to know that, that I've never judged a person in my life.
I mean, outside of this relationship, Trisha is definitely Elizabeth Bennet. But between the two of us, this woman is Darcy.
It is true. Between the two of us, I'm Darcy. But in general, I am Elizabeth Bennet. I'll take that.
With first impressions clearly not being right, because not even a month later, we were at the program and I had reached out to Trisha more out of a polite gesture, really, because I personally didn't want to spend 9 to 5 at the library alone like I had been doing for 2 days. It was just something polite to do, you know, I guess like a second shot.
That feels like a pity party. The way you phrase that sounds like...
I mean, it really was, but why don't you confess what was your thought process in accepting the invitation?
I want to let you know that I wasn't going to go. I was fully planning on never going and just sending you one of those formal texts being like, hello, thank you for the invite. I really appreciate it, but I will not be going, which is not the way I talk at all. But I thought, like, let me at least tell her I'm not going to go. She can live her own life. I'll live my own. And what happened is the next morning came around and it was 9 a.m. and I'm sitting in my room looking outside. It's beautiful out. And I'm thinking to myself, I have no friends. I have no friends right now. I'm in a summer research program in which most people are freshmen, if not juniors.
Yeah.
Two, most of them are also science majors.
Yeah. So they already have their established friend groups for the summer.
Right. And to go back to this idea of recommendations, this person was recommended to me. What if there is some truth to that, you know?
Yeah.
So I just thought to myself, can't hurt to try again, which is a weird thought if you think about it, because I think that in a lot of cases, and I don't know if this is true for everyone, I tend to make a first impression and stick to it. Like, I don't go back. I'm very unforgiving, which is a flaw of mine, but it has also saved me a lot of wasted time.
Yeah.
So I don't know if going off a first impression entirely is the best thing.
Right.
Or the worst.
I picked up two very interesting bullet points from this. One, when you mentioned that you would text formally instead of like texting like yourself, it's again, even through text message, which is a really impersonal thing, it's really hard to pick up on whose enunciations come through, whose like characteristics. Because you had mentioned before we had even met, when we were texting, I went from formal to like ridiculously goofy within a span of two texts, you know? And it's like, you can't figure out who someone is from there. And then you had mentioned, because you're relying a lot on first impression instead of like gut instinct, which is completely different. And I think it really helps when we learn how to distinguish the two.
You know, it's interesting you just said that though, because I do kind of go off of the thing. I don't know what to call it. I guess gut instinct would be best. For years, I've just been calling it vibes because I'm young and stupid. But I've been saying that a lot of people, I don't even need to have a conversation necessarily. Mm. I can just sort of feel, I know it's not right, but I just sort of feel a certain type of way about them and then I discard them or I decide I want to talk to them. Yeah. But it's generally just a feeling of like, just like who that person is, which is not always right, obviously. And I probably am subconsciously perceiving something about that person that I just don't like.
Yeah.
And attesting it to vibes, so-called. But it's a very interesting thing that you just said, because it's also like, here's a question I wanted to pose because I think it's a good one.
Yes.
It's like, how do we temper our expectations of ourselves when they're offset by other people's opinions of us? Because there are people making passing opinions of us all day based on this idea of a first impression. But how do you temper your expectations of who you are?
I feel like that goes back to a therapist's favorite point, which is that you should never seek validation from other people. You know, because I don't know, I guess I feel like we would all be more self-actualized people if we were able to only pay attention to the expectations that we have for ourselves, as opposed to what we already know people are thinking about us, which is very hard unless someone has already told you, because most of the time these are just conjectures. You know, we actually don't know what other people think about us unless they're being honest and we choose to believe it.
But in reality, right, and this is not to say anything against your general therapist, but in reality, it is not the case that people are just capable of ignoring the opinions of others or
ignoring the opinions of others.
And so, like, if we think about it realistically, what is your first impression of yourself? It doesn't really come from yourself. It definitely doesn't.
No.
And so you can look at yourself and think, this is who I think I am. But what if who you think you are? It's just, it's like a card house, you know?
Ooh.
Yeah, you just, it blows over.
I guess it's like when, have you seen Bolt?
The dog movie?
Yeah, I feel like that movie is an excellent explanation for like examining your question, right? Because this is a dog who has completely believed that he was like a superhero his entire life. And then now he's had to realize that what people have been telling him has been incorrect his entire time, because they wanted to keep him focused as not an actor, but like, I don't know, just someone actually in that universe. And so at the end of the film, you see that he's developed his own personality outside of what people have told him what he is. You know, he's figured out for himself who he is because of taking that step back.
Wow, that's so interesting that you say that. There is a theorist, a literary theorist called, I don't know if it's Louis or Lewis, because they're both kind of spelt the same way, but I'm going to go with Lewis, Althusser. And he wrote this thing about ideologies, and he basically asserts that like everybody is made up of ideology. He says, and I quote, "You are born from ideology." Mm-hmm. And so you're kind of born into inbred ways of thinking, and nobody can escape that. And a lot of people hate his theories. Like, I once sat in this English class where everybody was just like, that's a miserable way to live your life, thinking that you, nothing you've ever done or said is original, and that you are nothing except a bunch of ideologies put together. I like it. I actually am on the side that agrees with it. And obviously people can think what they want about it, but I do agree that we as people think we believe things on our own.
Yeah.
But I think everything has had an existence way before us, and we're just sort of born into them. And we can choose which ideologies we ascribe to, and we can choose which impressions we ascribe to. I think at the end of the day, it's just a choice between philosophies. It's not like you're making one of your own. So I don't know if it's possible actually to stand on your own. I challenge therapists everywhere. Is it possible?
Therapists hate her secrets.
Yeah, I said, therapists, come at me.
Wait, so do you have any, what's the name of the theorist again?
Althusser, yeah.
Okay. So do you have any personal recollections of like recognizing an ideology you have ascribed to and then changing it completely afterwards?
Oh, I've done that so many times.
Reinvent yourself 1,000 ways.
Yeah, seriously. Well, it's also because you do it so minimally. I don't think people consciously do that. I think some people try to, obviously. But I think there are also so many little moments in life where you're like fighting about something and you realize your point is just wrong. And you're like, for pride's sake, I could continue this. Or I could just say, yeah, actually, I'm stupid. And what you said was absolutely right. I think the first time I ever really, really did that, I'll say, is when Trump got elected. And this is not to trigger anybody in the audience, but when he got elected, I remember I was just mad for a lot of reasons. And I fought a lot of people who were Trump supporters on the basis of just like, I had ascribed to a political role and I thought that I was supposed to fight on behalf of it. And so I was like, I'm a liberal, whatever that means. Okay. I just like self-ascribed to that label. And I said, I'm a liberal, which means I have to fight whatever the other side is. And I remember I was fighting somebody and they had actually made a really good point about not just supporting Trump. They just made a good point about politics in America and division and what that means and what it means to label yourself based on these like completely arbitrary foundations. And I remember sitting there thinking, this person is completely right. I may not like his choice, but it is also based on completely arbitrary values. They're just made up. And while that has a real-time effect on us, it's also not a good reason to start canceling people. In the same way that you like look at somebody for the first time and you don't cancel them, you try and give people second chances. America's the land of second chances, apparently.
Ooh, really? Kinda,
yeah, it is. How'd you know? But yeah, it was one of those moments where I realized, oh man, we fight about things that are completely ideological. And while that matters, the awareness of that is more important, because I think it would actually lessen the amount of divisiveness we have if we all just understood that like we're fighting about man-made issues. And so if we can fight about them, we can also work together with them, you know?
Yeah. It reminds me of what we were talking about when we watched Sweet Magnolias.
Yeah.
You know, what was it? It was this need to always listen and to pursue. But that is a conscious effort, you know? I had written this in my notes. So in bringing the conversation back to first impressions, I read this article from The Cut. And so they talked about this study from UChicago, where they were talking about the moral tipping point, which is when we recognize a person shifts from the binary of bad to good in our mind. And in the case that you're talking about, it's like recognizing you don't have to ascribe to an ideology to recognize when there's a good point said by someone else. And it takes a conscious effort to like overturn that opinion in our head, because no one wants to be wrong. You know, there's such a sick pleasure in being right or thinking what you think is right. And when someone else disproves that, in the case of like a first impression, it can be really hard to continue on.
Yeah, that is such a good way of putting it. I like this idea of the moral tipping point, because it's true. Even when you recognize that someone has gone from bad to good on this scale, it's really hard to still want to continue to see them or talk with them, because you never want to acquiesce that you were the one in the wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know where that comes from. I'm not really sure where people get that from.
Or in the worst case, when you think someone is really good, but they're displaying a lot of red flags, and they finally display the worst red flag of all in whatever the relationship is.
Yeah.
And you have people tell you over and over again, and you just really don't want to say that you were wrong, because it's like embarrassing in that case.
You just brought up such a good point, actually. Here's the thing. People can tell you so much, and this is where you and I may disagree. Like I said, when I make an impression or when I've had an impression of somebody, I tend to just make that choice within the moment. I'm like, either I will see you again or talk to you or whatever, or I will not. And that's just that. And there's really no room for second chances. But I also am not considerate, because you have to think about the way first impressions manifest.
Yeah.
Because while you could have a physical first impression, if I go tell my friends, right, they now have a first impression of you. And this goes all the way back to my thing about expectations. They have this now impression of you that's solely based off of me. It's solely based off of my narrative and what I told them you were like.
Yeah.
And so there's also this way, this sort of narrative of first impressions that exists. It's like a subculture in which you're not actually being impressed upon, but someone is telling you the impression. I feel like there's a word for this where it's like a cycle, I guess.
Yeah.
It's weird, but it sort of gets watered down the way through. And it's kind of like with me and you, when I first met you, I thought you were weird. Now I could have kept that to myself and I would have changed my opinion. There would have been no harm done. But I told people who then later mentioned it again, but at this point I was friends with you and my friends had been like, oh, how's that weird girl? And I was like, actually, she's not weird. But if they had met you within that time, they would have already thought of you as a weird person. They would have already been like, Trisha thinks she's weird, which means I think she's weird.
Yeah.
And that would have affected just the whole dynamic of the relationships you would have had with my friends.
Yeah.
Which I think is so interesting because I guess I don't tend to look at other people's opinions so much. I tend to impart my opinion onto my friends, but I rarely, which is another flaw of mine, since we're discussing what a horrible person I am, I rarely take into account what my friends think of others, which is horrible because, you know, at the end of the day, your friends are the ones that give you the red flags or they say like, you know, this person may not be right for you, or this person seems a little off. And I tend to just be like, okay, I heard you. And then I continue to do what I think is best. And I guess, yeah, if you have anything to say on that point, because like, where do you toe the line? I don't know how it is for you, you know?
I think we do differ because I tend to, unfortunately, be a person who really wants to hear what other people think. So I can like, mod podge that into my own opinion. But I think that there is a value to having your own, I guess, boundary is what I'd call it for you, like between what you give to other people and what you'll listen from them, to this point where it's like, do I have an opinion on this person in the end if I'm only listening to the red flags or the good qualities that this person is sharing with me? You know, yeah. I feel like there has to be a healthy balance between the two because there is a weight to listening to opinion, but you can't forget what you think in the first place.
But then it's also like, is the opinion littered by bias, you know? Because I trust my friends to know what I like and don't like or what I would find bad and good. But I also can only know that more myself than they can. And so I wonder, I'm like, oh, my friends may hate a person who I'm very, very close to. And while that has value, that's also very dependent on like subjective thinking. And so do I take that into consideration that they hate the person? Like, what do I put more weight on, that they hate the person or that they might hate the person just because those two are fundamentally different?
Yeah. I guess it's just a case. I keep thinking about red flags because yeah. I feel like I gloss over those when I meet people so frequently because I like to believe the best in people.
You do.
Yeah. So
you really do.
I don't know. In that case, I guess it's important to have an outside perspective. Just speaking as someone who is unfortunately an optimist at their core, you know?
It's funny you're saying that because I recently downloaded Hinge, which for you guys who don't know is a dating app. And I was swiping through it yesterday, just like randomly, whatever. And Hinge is set up kind of sort of like Tinder, but with a little bit more information. Everyone's like a little more classy. Sorry, Tinder. But I was swiping through it and I was sitting next to my sister and I kept Xing out of people just based on their first picture, their first response. Like immediately I was just Xing people out and she's like, what? Why that guy? Or why that person? And I was like, I was just like ugly or fat or whatever. Whatever the horrible superficial reason was, I just kind of wasn't feeling it. And I actually wonder in the world of technology how that affects our first impression making. Because while you're so eager to kind of ignore red flags or you're just like willing to give people that chance in the beginning, I am so very not willing. I'm just determined to not do that. So it's like, again, also in this age of technology, where does that put me and where does that put you, especially when everything is becoming a transaction of the internet?
Yeah.
Because I wonder if it hinders my ability to make a good first impression because I so firmly don't believe in them, or like at least I believe that they're negative things. I now also have to think about the way I'm coming off. Unfortunate.
Yeah, the dating apps, that's a good one. Because they're an entire franchise based on a series of first impressions, right? Because everyone wants to have a good meet cute. And it can start at the tip of your phone, but I don't know. I think speaking to someone who swipes left on everyone virtually, I guess the dating app can be seen as a positive thing to like combat that, you know, forcing yourself to maybe give someone 5 more seconds of looking at their profile, right? Or maybe even taking the chance to like text them. I mean, that's different if like, of course, their first picture has like a swastika on it or something, you know, like there are obvious things you swipe left on, but I don't know, maybe it's a good exercise for you.
I want to find this neo-Nazi on Hinge that you've been looking at.
Hit me up.
Yeah, hello. That's so interesting though, actually. The thing I was thinking about is like, obviously the people who are listening to this cannot see me, but I'm not exactly like the prettiest person on planet Earth, obviously, like who is?
Conventionally pretty, you know, by Western beauty standards.
Right. It's like, I'm not the prettiest person on Earth, and this is something that I want other people to think about. And like, you can also respond to this, but it's like, I know that. Like, I know that I'm not like your perfect TV, like woman, whatever. Obviously that has no effect on me whatsoever because I literally could care less. But in terms of first impressions, especially on dating apps and stuff, I feel like I have the power to act as though I were the prettiest person on planet Earth. And so I swipe left proverbially on all these like hundreds, like literally hundreds of men. Based off of just like random shit. Like I'll just be like, oh, he seems like he likes Star Wars too much. Oh, this one, he's a little tubby, as if I don't have a cute little beer belly growing. And it's weird to me that I find power. I don't find power from it necessarily, but I feel like I exude power when I do it. And I wonder if that's true for anybody else. Like, where does that come from too? In like making a judgment on somebody, especially when it's a negative one, is weirdly more empowering than giving somebody a chance.
I want to go back to what you were saying as if like when you mentioned the the beer belly thing.
Yeah.
It's like, I think earlier in this conversation you had said something about like, or maybe this is what I heard, projecting what you don't like about yourself onto someone else.
Yeah.
And giving an opportunity to like strike it down as if that's not something you should have more compassion for, you know? I guess it's like we always look for ourselves in other people, and because we want to like ourselves, we'll obviously like people more if they share similar things. But in the case of like a beer belly or maybe liking something too much, I don't know, it comes off as like secondhand embarrassment.
Yeah, honestly, I never thought about it that way, but that's such a good way of putting it. Like if you see the very thing you're insecure about on somebody else, it makes you more likely to like cut them down. Guard them as a person, because that's what you essentially want to do to yourself. Not to therapize anybody, but like that is interesting. But I also wonder if like if it's just also a matter of like the first impression of technology also just being so like disattached. Because the first impression in person, like when we met, right, to go back to that, I hope at least did not indicate that I thought you were a big fat weirdo in person, because there's like this weird thing of social norms that are attached to it. And again, like while first impressions also negate social context, they don't necessarily just avoid cultural norms.
Yeah.
And so obviously at the time I did not say anything to you that would be like, oh, you're weird, you know?
No, you were very quiet.
Right.
I just so said, reserved. I had actually thought you had no personality.
I didn't. I still don't. No, but it's that very interesting phenomenon where online, at least, first impressions sort of can be manipulated.
Yeah.
Because there's no real investment in them. Or at least that's what I think. Yeah, I just said that as like a blanket statement, but it's not necessarily. I think there's no real personal investment in technological relationship.
Which unless all of you that are willing to pursue.
Right.
Yeah.
Unless you go beyond the first impression. But the first impression itself is like a standalone thread that is very easy to cut. Because the thread's not attached to like your heart or anything, you know? It's just like your finger.
Actually, I am heartbroken every time someone swipes left on me. So
you said every time I got ghosted on Hinge, my heart.
Okay, I think in terms of ghosting, if we apply it to, if it's done in the very beginning, I think it's fine. You know, because you already have no investment in the person, to borrow that turn of phrase. But there is a difference, at least I think for me more, because I find that I pursue like the relationship making beyond the first impression.
Yeah.
To ghost someone then is cruel. You know, if you're deciding to exit a friendship at that point or a relationship or whatever, you should always say something. You know?
I agree. But there's also a matter of like the impression that you give off when you ghost somebody right in the beginning. Because that's also, here's what we can also debate, right? How long does a first impression last? Like, when do you go from a first impression to just like, it's just like your daily judgment on this person, right? Like, for me, especially on dating apps, I think the longevity of a first impression exists. I think it exists in a longer time frame than in person. I think in person, it's that quick either stare or a conversation or whatever.
Right.
But online, I think it's a full conversation. I think it's the chatting somebody, and I think it's also them initiating or taking action or whatever. Yeah. But I also think part of that is ghosting. Like, while I agree with you that ghosting in the beginning is really no harm done, it's also an impression of a person. Like, would I appreciate somebody who in the beginning also just showed the courtesy they would show later on and just be like, I'm not really interested, or this was not what I was looking for, I'm going to ghost you now. I'd be like, cool. Thanks, bye. You know?
Yeah.
But I also wouldn't be mad at the person who ghosted me. I would just consider that like, okay, this is how this person feels. And instead of sending me like a, I'm just not feeling it, they decided to disappear off of planet Earth. Not a horrible option, but does it give off the best version of who you are? Even if you have no interest in the person, because here's the thing, like, we always want to make better impressions on people that we're interested in, which is so strange to me, because I'm like, so you just want to come off like a dick to everyone else? You're okay with coming off like a horrible person to everyone else?
I guess when I had said that, I was thinking of like the guys who only post like pictures of them shirtless or with like their fish on the fish hook. Yes. If you ask them, well, really interesting,
there are too many fishers.
New Jerseyans, what's going on? But I guess I was thinking in that case where it's like you try to have an interesting conversation, but you're getting literally nothing from them. I feel like in that case, it's fine because maybe they wouldn't appreciate it. But maybe I'm not giving them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe there is a soul in a New Jersey boy who fishes.
I don't think so. I mean, I'm not telling you to go out and look either. But I do think that, again, it's all about this, like how invested you are in that impression, in making that impression. It matters, because like if you're meeting somebody for the first time in real life and it's someone you like, the amount of work, and I can only speak as a woman, but the amount of work and the amount of thoughts that just run through your mind to get to that first impression is insane. And I know a lot of people are like, well, I just put on a dress, I throw on some shoes. Yeah, I try and look a little extra cute. But I'm like, but it's also the time and effort you spend thinking about it, like thinking about the moment and the person and everything that's led up to the moment and what the moment may result in. And all that extra time that's based on this like minimal time you spend together and create that impression is really what's important. It's like that investment that you make determines whether or not your first impression is going to be good or bad. But then it also defines the relationship for the whole time afterward.
Yeah.
And I wonder why people are so comfortable allowing themselves to be misjudged when the person doesn't have an investment in the other person. Like, if I was just uninterested in meeting you and I didn't really care about you, I would happily allow you to just think whatever you wanted of me, because it doesn't matter, because I didn't think I would ever see you again. I think that's so strange. Like, I feel like that's such a, now that I think about it, a weird human phenomena in which we all just allow ourselves to be misrepresented in other people's minds.
Yeah.
Because we think it doesn't matter.
I guess it really just comes down to the investment.
Yeah, honestly, the people listening to this podcast are going to start thinking we're talking about economics.
To clarify, we do not support capitalism. I don't know. I guess I was thinking what you were just talking about reminded me of maybe in terms of being misjudged, it's like, at least speaking from a woman's experience going on a date with a complete stranger, it's like, I want to look cute, but will he kill me at the end? You know?
Oh my God. You jumped.
I guess not to say that. I don't know. Not to say that so casually, because obviously this is like a real problem in the world. But I guess what I'm wondering is like, maybe, at least in terms of women, maybe they're not afraid or worried about seeming like a bitch for ditching a guy if he gives them like, I don't know, creepy vibes.
No, I do understand that because I'm also a part of that.
I'm also like, a woman.
I'm also a woman, just to let you know. But I guess I don't mean coming off the wrong way at the end of the day. What I mean is like, I guess I can only, again, I can only speak for myself, but for me, it's like if someone didn't matter to me or I'd gone into a meeting thinking like this person just doesn't matter and I know I'm meeting them for the first time, I would literally wear whatever I wanted and I would say whatever I wanted and I wouldn't care what they thought. But I'm realizing now that what they would think of me is like, oh, this person is like a lazy slob who, you know, whatever. And I don't know why I'm comfortable with that. Because now that I think about it, I'm like, I wouldn't want anyone to think I was just some lazy, like, slobby, gross person if I'm really not.
But are you applying the same weight to everyone in that general statement of, like, anyone?
But that's what I'm thinking is, like, maybe we should. I don't. But now I'm thinking, what if we all did? I think one that could easily make the world a much better place in which, because if everyone cared, just not cared what other people think, but if everyone cared enough about who they were presenting to other people or who they were in the world, they would start to realize how often they're not who they want to be.
You're talking about compassion and respect.
Yeah, essentially I'm talking about empathy, right? I'm talking about understanding that like you may be having a bad day, but that whole day defining who you present to other people or who you present in situations as yourself can define a whole series of things from there on afterward. And you could have a series of bad days based on that one.
Yeah.
Which is really unfortunate.
That reminds me of the Black Mirror episode, Nosedive. Have you seen it?
I don't watch Black Mirror.
Trisha, what?
Yeah, I'm a horrible, miserable person.
I mean, to be fair, their last few seasons were like, eh. But there's this episode Rashida Jones wrote or like produced or something, and it's all about how, like with your phone.
Disclaimer, if you've never seen Black Mirror, don't listen to this.
Spoiler-free zone. Actually, it's not. But it's like when you meet someone for the first time, or maybe it's like the cashier at like a Starbucks, you rate them based on the impression they've given you, you know? So I feel like, I don't know, I think there is merit in what you're saying, but we always have to be careful of how much weight we give to wanting other people to care about us. Like think of Instagram influencers, their entire job is trying to get people to like them.
But what if it's not about other people caring about you? What if it's just you caring about yourself? That's what I'm trying to instill here. It doesn't really matter, I guess, what anybody thinks of you. But shouldn't it matter to you who you're coming off as? Yeah.
Well, I don't know. What if there are people who are very confident in dressing like a slob, quote unquote?
Then that's great. But that's who they are, you know?
Right. But they still want to make a good impression. You know,
good point. I guess I didn't think that through.
No, I don't. I just feel like whenever we think about the ways in which we like ourselves and the ways that we think of other people liking us, it's far more nuanced than I guess we'll ever realize, because there are things that are probably happening, you know, like with eye contact or like body movement that we'll never be able to like quite place why we don't like them or why we do. But it's just a fact of what we've registered.
No, it is true. You know, there's a disabilities theorist who, interestingly, and this obviously, again, is a disability scholar, but it relates to first impressions, called Rosemary Garland Thompson. And she talks about staring as an act of impression, as like a first impression. And so this is like a quote from her. She says, an eye-snagging stare of intense attention opens a social relationship between two people. The more attractive one's self-presentation, the more competent and esteemed one is thought to be, which translate into economic and social advantage. So essentially she's talking about the value of non-communicative communication.
Okay.
Right, and what's in a stare. And I think that's so interesting because we're both debating on the same point here, which is like that initial response you have to somebody else and what that transaction entails. Because from there on out, like I said, that one bad day can define a series of bad days or a series of good ones, depending on that impression you give off. So I think it's interesting that you just said that, you know, what if somebody's confident dressing like a slob or like that's just their style, but they still want to give off a good first impression, you know, the other person registers it as a lazy slob thing to do. But that's where we have to kind of, I think, consider the role of impression in social transactions. Like, where does it stand? Because I think if you're comfortable, if you feel like you've represented yourself right in whatever way, whether it's physically or mentally or emotionally, whatever, if you feel as though you've represented yourself properly, then I think that that feeling, see, I firmly believe that that feeling would come through regardless of the initial impression, because like you would be confident enough to relay whatever you wanted to articulately and well to a person. They would be like, oh, this person is not what I thought they were. And so it's like, where does the impression, how much value does it really hold in the transaction if we can change it very easily?
Maybe we should put more value on gut instinct over impression then.
Arguably, yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
For sure, because gut instinct you also can't fight. It's like a weird flight or flight. It's like your body's just saying no or yet, you know. Although sometimes, ladies and gentlemen, it is just lust, and put that away as a good Christian neighborhood. But most of the time, your gut is telling you the right thing.
There are things that your body will always know before you do.
Right, because
it's that is the beauty.
Yeah. It is a nervous response system. So
I am a poet. I will call it beautiful.
We love that. You are not my opus.
I hope that when you continue swiping on Hinge, you will think about this conversation every time you decide to swipe.
I absolutely will for about 30 seconds when I start swiping, and then we'll forget all about it when I'm high off of the power of swiping left.
But I will say that maybe it's not always projecting your insecurities onto someone you're swiping left on. Maybe it is a good thing. You know, maybe you just... Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe they're just ugly.
Maybe you know your worth. Yeah, do not let physical attraction stop you from pursuing someone, because I've been attracted to many conventionally ugly men.
Oh. I feel like it's not all physical attraction either. And I feel like all the people that are like judging us right now for having this conversation, thinking we're superficial, it's not just about that. And obviously, if you're on any of these dating apps, that's where it starts. You can't lie to yourself and pretend like you're on it for the personalities. That might come later.
Well, I guess in that case, it's like, why are you on Tinder then if you want personality? Go on Hinge or Bumble.
Right. But even then, again, you make an assumption based off of what they look like and then what they said in three snippets. It's weird that a first impression can also just be boiled down to those things. Because they're, it's so weird, actually. Those things are completely void of context. You know, those three pictures and those three responses have no context. So a person will try and piece together your entire being based off a contextless, backgroundless, circumstanceless
social security
response. And then they'll ask you for your credit card number and your social security.
And if that's not love, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know what is.
Me neither.
No, context is always key, which goes back to our meet cute
It really does.
Of stress.
It changed everything.
Although, to be fair, Trisha is right. I did overshare a bunch. I had
so much oversharing. Yeah, no filter. So,
you know, going back to communication theory, remember there are different levels of intimacy that you cannot skip over. You may think you have fallen in love with someone, and maybe that's true, but it also just could have been trauma bonding, or maybe you just really like something that they said. So watch out.
That is also what I like to call our meet cute, trauma bonding. That is how we became friends, and it defines our whole relationship.
I know, it was a joke, but I was like, I gotta reassess.
Reassess, see? Gotta take a minute to reassess the first impression.
I feel very open right now and like more compassionate than usual. So I hope something benefits someone else today because of it.
Seriously, I hope it does too.
All right, guys, thanks for listening. Big shout out to Kieran Choi and his brother Connor Choi. Check them out. You can find them on YouTube. You can also find them on Facebook and Instagram. And also,
big thank you to our sound designer, Laura Feliz. She is a recent graduate of TCNJ's graphic design program. Check out her Instagram for more information.
Women of Dolor aims to alienate no one and address everyone in discussing topics of culture, society, and humanity in a way that bridges gaps of understanding and illuminates misinformation.